Welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 49. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me today is Steve Perry. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, you?
Absolutely happy that I've got you on the show. Now, for those listeners that don't know who Steve is, Steve is the gentleman that was kind enough to let us borrow loads of systems for our little event called Retromania. So how many systems do you actually own then, Steve?
I've sort of lost track of count at the moment exactly, but it's somewhere around about the 130-ish mark at the moment. Probably got about 10 which ain't working, which need to be repaired. I still need to find someone to repair those, with various different faults. A couple of them dig up in the smoke in my front room here. But yeah, about 130, and I've got three full-size arcade machines in my living room as well.
It sounds like a dream. It sounds like pure bliss. You've also organised loads of events in the past and stuff like that. And like I said to our listeners, you're going to help us organise a little event. So before we go into any of that, let's travel back in time a little bit. How did you first get into gaming? What's your first memory of gaming?
Probably when I was growing up, the very first machines that I had. First of all, it would have been the Atari 2600. I've actually still got it. It's dunked
working. The very same one?
Very same one, yeah. Kept it all these years. It's actually a real heavy fixer as well. It's got the Sunnyvale stick on the back, so yeah. But then I had a Commodore Plus 4. For some reason, my parents, instead of getting me a Commodore 64, they got a Commodore Plus 4. sort of like growing up, realising how much more popular the Commodore 64 was. I did curse them a bit over that, but yeah. I've still got a lot of fond memories, and the Commodore Plus 4 does hold a special place in my heart because I grew up with it and used it so much. And there's also quite a few unique good games on it as well, which weren't ported to any other system or anything.
Like what games then, for example, then?
One which springs to mind is Magician's Curse, which is like a run-around platformer game. The sprites on it are quite good as well because there's no sprite capabilities on the Commodore Plus 4, so a lot of the games of sprites are quite blocky on them because it had no sprite capabilities. But, yeah, the Magician's Curse is a good one which brings back memories, little simple platformer, collector talismans and golden cups and things. And, yeah, that was a good game.
Who published that? Do you know what company made that? Who programmed it?
Gremlin Graphics.
Oh, well, I did not know that. I'll have to sort of look up on YouTube, and that is the beauty of YouTube. Any game that you can't remember, you just type it in, and there it is. Someone's playing it on like a nice video.
Oh, yeah. I've actually been quite enjoying... there's a bloke who ran his own event as well called Matt Korn. In the recent era, run sort of like one of the first events called Bite Back, which was a really good event. The venue wasn't too great, but the event was brilliant, fantastic. And he's running something called the Mastertronic Chronicles at the moment, where he's bought every single Commodore 64 Mastertronic game, and he's playing through them and creating little videos about them, so that's worth checking out as well if you've not seen that one.
I've not, actually, and that sounds really, really fascinating, because I used to love the sort of like games published by them.
Yeah, so there's some really bad ones, but there's some really good ones as well.
But again, it was all budget releases back then, so you couldn't really go wrong for $1.99, $2.99. It was hit and miss, but you know, sometimes you did have some hidden gems that you could play for hours, and sometimes weeks.
Oh yeah, and by the time I got a Commodore 64, which must have been about 1991, about September... Well, it's Commodore Format Issue 12, I remember that much, because that's the first magazine that I bought from the newsagent for it. Most of the games were from car boot sales by then, and the local computer shop down the road called the Doss House, which most of the games were about 50p each, from what I recall.
Oh, wow. It's a shame games can't be like that price now. Modern consoles, £40, £50. I mean, you can get them second-hand, you know, for maybe under a tenner, but still, it's not the way it used to be. I mean, back in the day, £1.99, £2.99, you could go to Woolworths, you could go to Boots, you could go to WH Smith. You were spoilt for choice.
Oh, yeah, but you've still got... all the indie games on Xbox 360 now, which are a bit cheaper. I think most of those are about 400 Microsoft points or something, I think, which are quite good. And that's probably the equivalent, I would say, I think, nowadays. But I never buy new games as soon as they come out. If you wait about 2 or 3 weeks, they can drop like a tenner, 20 quid. I very, very rarely buy a game just after it's been released. I think the only one I did buy in recent times was Grand Theft Auto 4, but that took quite a while to come down in price.
Yeah.
So quite glad I did.
No, I think I waited a good 2 years before that game came down. I listened to it in loads of gaming podcasts, and I thought, you know what, I'm not going to get that game because, I don't know, I just didn't want to spend all that money on it.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
But going back to retro stuff then, so after the C64 then, where did you go from there gaming-wise?
Went to the PC.
Oh, okay.
Big jump. Very big jump. And yeah, it was around 1995 when Rumbelows went bankrupt because I remember my dad bought the PC. It was actually an S-Com make PC, which it's sort of a link there because, of course, S-Com bought the Commodore name. But it's before S-Com opened their shops and computer shops and everything, but it was an S-Com brand 486-66DX2, 66 megahertz. I think it had about 4 megabyte of RAM in it, Windows 3.1, DOS 6.2. Yeah, so it was a big leap and a big jump, but I'd already done a few training courses at a local training centre, so I knew all about Windows and PCs
right.
And DOS and everything and was quite up on it.
So what did you think of the gaming side of it then compared to the 8-bit system like the C64 that you had? What were the games that you had?
The first games I had was Microsoft Flight Simulator. I think it was version 6 from memory. It was on quite a few floppy disks from what I recall.
Yeah.
And SimCity 2000.
Oh, wow.
Which is really good because my favourite genre of game is actually simulators
okay.
and management games kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, I've spent many, many hours on SimCity 2000 from then on.
I think one of our co-hosts, Glenn Atkinson, he's a big fan of the SimCity series as well. And he was recently talking about that on a previous podcast that he still plays it to this day. So where did you go then from the PC then?
I pretty much stuck with a PC for quite a while. I missed out on a generation of consoles and computers. Then I think... Well, earlier sort of in between, I did have a Master System 2 with Alex Kidd built in.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have that for a little while beforehand. And I also remember having a SNES as well at some point and buying that from Cash Converters.
Yeah.
Mostly just so I could play Pilot Wings, which is my favourite game on it.
Right.
It's just fantastic game, Pilot Wings. I still can't get past the special stages. Yeah. Just doing the parachute and landing the plane. Fantastic. Love that game.
So what I want to ask you then is like, how on earth did you go from owning all these consoles as a youngster, growing up, and then having all the consoles and computers you have now? How did you come and do that, you know?
Well, it's been probably gradual over the last 5 or so years, I'd say.
What made you collect these things, though?
Well, the Commodore 64 still held a special place in my heart, and even when I got the PC, I started messing about on Commodore 64 emulators on it.
Yeah.
And found a public domain disc with a C64 emulator on it and all these games and C64 music, and I was really into the C64 music, and a bloke called Chris Abbott created some MIDI files which I managed to find on the internet. When I was at school, in fact, I used to borrow their only computer with their 14.4K modem and download these MIDI files.
Wow.
And I sent Chris a few emails back then and whatever, but I went to a couple of the Back in Time live events,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't really into the retro game, and I was more into the retro music.
Yeah.
Then I went to a Retrovision event in Frome, quite enjoyed it, quite liked it, went to the next one they held in Oxford, took a PlayStation 2 along, then the next one I went to after that, I took a few more bits along, then a few more bits, and it sort of got out of control and out of hand, and just because I have an interest in these machines and want to know more about them and like them. I think I actually have more fun trying to get them to work and figure out how they work and everything than actually playing the games on them nowadays.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Since you have all these things, I mean, do you know how to fix them? Do you repair them?
I don't know. That's what I'm pretty useless at. I'd much rather pay someone else to fix them who knows what they're doing. Okay. Or what I prefer even better is to buy them working and hope they stay working and keep working. But of course, with 20, 30-year-old equipment, you can't have that all the time. So, I do need to find a good repairer for some of these. I've got a few nice ones at the moment which just are broken and not working. And it'll be nice to get them up and running again.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
All the machines that you've actually owned then, what is your personal favourite one that you've got in your collection and why?
Oh, well, as I say, the Commodore Plus 4 has always held a special place in my heart, and I've got a Commodore 116 now, which is the German release of it, which had little rubber keys like a Spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mini Commodore Plus 4. It's quite cute, actually. That's probably one of my favourites, and I bought it on eBay from someone from Germany, which is quite lucky, actually, because in Germany at the time, they didn't have to accept PayPal, so it's quite difficult buying things from people in Germany. And a lot of time they didn't want to deal with UK people because of it and the complication of having to go down the travel agents and buying euros and sending them through the post and everything to buy stuff. But I actually bought this and I didn't know at the time because I didn't really read it. I just saw the pictures and a bit of wording and just saw it was working. It actually got a 64K mod fitted in it as well.
Oh, wow.
Because originally they only had 16K like the Commodore 16.
Yeah.
And there are a number of games which use the whole 64K.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some of the games they released like a 16K and a Plus 4 64K version on the one tape.
Right.
So you could either play the Commodore 16 version or mm-hmm. the better Commodore Plus 4 version. And normally the difference between the games like Saboteur, it's just night and day. It's just amazing.
So what is it? What were the main differences? Graphically, more music, like maybe slightly bigger, you know, game itself?
Bigger game and better graphics. Of course, they've got more memory to play with, and it can be almost like the Saboteur version on the Plus 4 is almost like the Commodore 64 version.
Yeah.
But I'd say the 16K version is probably like a very basic Spectrum version. Nothing good Spectrums.
Yeah.
Not my favourite machine, though, because they always die on me. The amount of Spectrums I've had go wrong on me is unbelievable. I don't know why. I just have to touch them, I think, and they stop working. And
now, the next thing I was going to ask you then, now, where do you get all your consoles? Do you buy them from eBay? Do you get given them? Do you find them in charity shops? Where do you get all your stuff from?
No, I wish I was given them. It's a very expensive hobby, this. The majority of them has been eBay. But now and then, I've picked a few bits up from car boot sales, of course. Now and then I've done a few trades with people I know on the forums, and mm-hmm. AmiBay is a good place to buy stuff as well. They've got a good forum, AmiBay, with a good buy and sell section. And generally, you know, you're going to get something good off there, and the people on there are honest, and because they're forum members and they don't want to be seen as dishonest or anything, so that's another good place to go. Bought a few bits from there recently. For me, it mostly is eBay. A lot of car boot sellers now are getting onto it, knowing what stuff's worth and realizing they won't get any money for it at the car boot sale, so they just put it on eBay now.
I don't know. I mean, I find it completely opposite, to be honest with you, Steve. I mean, I went down a couple of weeks ago and I spent about 30 something pounds. I bought myself a Commodore 64, which came in the World Cup box. I bought myself a Sega Saturn for £6, and I got myself a Sega Mega Drive for £10 with about 10 games. And there's so much out there. So this is one of the reasons why we do the boot sales every Sunday, because it's just trying to find what's out there. It's just fun. What is the one console that you haven't got that you really want to have?
Ooh, I don't know about console, but I wouldn't mind an Atari Falcon 030 at the moment.
What's that one? I've not heard of that one.
It's the last... Atari released the Atari ST, and like the Atari Falcon is the last Atari 16-bit home computer that they made. And as a result, they go for quite a bit. A lot of people use them for music work and stuff, like Cubase and stuff like that, I believe. Yeah. But I wouldn't mind one of them, but they normally go for around £500.
Wow, so
it's not the it's not the cheapest of systems. I'm guessing the reason I don't find what I want at the car boot sales is because the stuff I'm looking for is just a bit rare and a bit more unique and a bit more different kind of thing, you know? But, yeah, I wouldn't mind an Atari Falcon at the moment. A few other bits I wouldn't mind. It's just finding them and getting them for the right price kind of thing and, yeah, just not spending too much.
Now, the next thing I wanted to find out for you, you've got, like, basically a treasure chest at your home of all these different systems, computers, consoles. How often do you get to play them, and what do you play the most?
I don't get to play them, really, as often as I should, because, I don't know, I do like the modern gaming as well, not just the retro gaming, so normally if I play a game, it's on the PS3, but I normally get to play them at events. That's probably where I do play them the most, is at events, and... I don't know, I like to play a little bit of everything. I like discovering new games which I've not played before and sort of missed and are quite good. And that's what these events are good. You get to see what other people are playing and learn about new games. And it's good to find a new game that I've not played before, which I enjoy.
No, definitely. The next thing I was going to say to you, you've mentioned some of the events there. Now, you've done quite a few events. I think I remember a few years ago looking online, and this is before I lived in Essex, and you did one, I think, what was it, in Chelmsford or somewhere, in a pub, something Lion?
I did, yes. Yeah, I did one at the Red Lion. Retro Revolution, that's it.
Had you done any of these events previously in the past, or was that, like, you know, the first one you had done?
It's probably the first and the only one that I've done completely solo.
Right.
And probably ever will do completely solo. Because although I'm helping out with Retromission coming up as well late this year, I'm co-helping with Amy there, so we're working on it together kind of thing to ease the load a little bit so we can both enjoy it rather than one person stressing over absolutely everything. But it's just something that I wanted to do, and I wanted to just run my own completely solo-y kind of thing and give it a go and see what it's like. And yeah, it went well. More people turned up than I expected, but... it's quite a small pub. Unfortunately, also, that pub no longer exists. It's stopped trading now, and I think it's some kind of food catering company now in there, so it's no longer a pub at all. But, it's probably my only disappointment about it is it wasn't a bigger pub and there wasn't more room kind of thing. It was all a bit squashed up.
I mean, how big was the room itself? And the reason I'm asking this, because later on we'll talk about Retromania, but the room that I've hired out, it's not a big room, so just so our listeners can get some feedback. So how big was this room, roughly?
Ooh, I don't know. It's probably about 10 foot across, and it was very long. So I had all the machines laid out on the end tables long ways, with the table sort of up against the wall kind of thing. There's two bar areas, but... we only had one side of the bar, the smaller side, rather than the bigger side.
Yeah.
Looking back now, I probably would have preferred to have done it on the bigger side. Just to have that little bit more room to move about and everything. Because once a lot of people arrived, when it was at its busiest, it was just a bit too claustrophobic.
How did you go about advertising this event then, back in the day?
I got a load of leaflets made up and just went round... all the local Chinese takeaways. I ate a lot of Chinese food coming up to that event for some reason.
Yeah.
Giving them a few leaflets to hand out when I ordered me dinners. Also went in a few other shops as well locally in the area. It's actually near a street in Chelmsford called Molsham Street, which is like all little independent shops and stores and things like bakeries and... Some very interesting shops. Like there's a little shop, I think, which just sells whiskey and stuff like that. So not all your brand name high street stores kind of thing. So I just went in those shops and bought food or stuff from them and said, can I leave some of these leaflets here? We're doing this gaming event. And also went in the co-ops as well and put them on their notice boards in the co-ops.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I've done. And also the forums as well. Just went online on the forums. Went on Facebook, wasn't expecting hundreds and hundreds of people, but just enough to make it
show up. Then
didn't do an exact count, but I don't know, it must have been about 50 plus, which was a good number. I was happy.
No, definitely. So did you find that the people all came in like at the same time, or they just in spurts throughout the day?
It was busier during the middle of the day and quieter at the start and quieter at the end, of course. But yeah, the busiest time was probably about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock-ish, when the most people were there. And that's around the time when we were holding a lot of competitions as well. Mm-hmm. We ran a few competitions throughout the day. Kieran came along. He's a big Atari Jaguar enthusiast. And
right.
He ran a competition on the Jaguar CD as well, I believe, from memory. Which was quite good.
What sort of competition did they do with the Jaguar then?
I'm just trying to remember. It was a shooting game. I'm just trying to remember the name of it now.
Alien vs. Predator? Doom.
No, it was more of a retro, like, shoot-em-up, like Gallagher. It wasn't Gallagher. I'm just trying to remember the name of it now. But, yeah, it's on the Jaguar CD anyway. I'll try and find out what it was. It's going to bug me now. But he bought a few bits along, which was nice of him to help out. And that's what's nice about these events sometimes is people just offering to also bring their own stuff along and help out, and mm-hmm. it all helps a little bit and varies things and makes it a bit different. And yeah, it's quite good.
Weren't you a bit worried though? Because this is one of the things that worries me. Is just like sometimes you might get people that you don't know at all. Aren't you worried that your things might get swiped or things might go missing or break?
Yeah, I do have too much faith in humans sometimes. I do believe there was something actually stolen from the event. I didn't find out till afterwards because it wasn't one of my things. I believe it was one of Kieran's CDs, but for some reason it was a really crappy game, so I wasn't too bothered.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones which weren't really worth anything whatsoever, and I believe he got a replacement quite cheaply. Mm. But it does happen, but sometimes you do just have to have faith in people and just keep an eye on stuff and hope for the best. Although it is a bit easier at the smaller events than the bigger ones. The bigger ones, it's a lot more difficult to keep an eye on everything and manage everything. And I think that's why they've stopped leaving so much stuff out and games out and cartridges out at the big events now, whereas at the little ones, you can keep an eye on it. And what I'm also doing now for CD game systems, I'm just leaving copies out, backups, yeah. I should say, not copies, backups. I'm leaving backups out. So, if a backup goes missing, you can easily create a replacement without having to worry. And also, if it does get damaged, again, you don't have to worry. And I'm also really big on the multi-carts as well at the moment. A lot of the systems I've got multi-carts for them, which means they can only nick one thing, a multi-cart, and you're probably going to notice that going missing.
Yeah.
If it does go missing, rather than leaving loads of loose cartridges around. But it also makes it easier to transport everything because you don't have to transport boxes and boxes of games around, which use up a lot of space. It's why I'm not a games collector and just a machine collector. If I was a machines collector and a games collector, I probably wouldn't be able to move at the moment. I'll just be surrounded by it.
But I mean, you have got an impressive range of collection. I mean, it's just like when you put that list on the forums, said that we could borrow a few machines, I didn't know where to begin. It's just like, it's absolutely stunning the amount of machines you've got. I mean, I've been collecting now properly for about a year and a bit now, and I hope to have as many systems as you do. How long has this taken you, by the way, to collect all these systems that you have?
I'd say probably about 4 or 5 years, but it's been a very gradual thing. I don't know, saying that, probably in about 6 months ago, I did go a bit mad and buy a lot of stuff at once, which the postman weren't too happy about, I don't think, and made it a bit difficult for me to manage as well, remembering what I bought and when to expect it to arrive. And one of the other problems is also sometimes buying the same system from two people, knowing who it arrives from.
Yeah.
Because is it the system from this person or is it the system from that person? Because it's the same system. I don't often buy doubles, but there's a few systems I've got doubles of, and I had to buy doubles where I bought one which don't quite work properly or just bought a second system for whatever reason. Like at the moment, I'm after another original PlayStation at the moment, so I can do link up on PlayStation 1. There's a few good linked up games on the PlayStation 1, so yeah, just looking for another one at the moment. Shouldn't be difficult to find, really. They're quite common.
Well, I mean, if I find one in a boot sale, I'll be more than happy to sort of, like, you know, send one your way for, you know, for actually helping us out for, you know, for Retromania. So going back to the events then, after that first one you did, where did you go down there event-wise?
Well, before that, I've always helped out of them a little bit. Probably Retrovision quite a lot more than other events. Yeah, most events I went to, I just took sort of like a carload of stuff along with me kind of thing, and whatever I could fit in the car, just take along and help out, take a few TVs along if people needed some tellies, because I got a shed full of tellies.
Oh, my God.
You need a lot of TVs for all these systems. And I've also got a lot of flat screens as well now. I've been buying flat screens because, yeah, you've got a limit to how many CRT TVs you can fit in a van safely.
No, yeah,
In terms of weight as well as size. So, yeah, I bought a load of flat screens as well now, because also some systems actually work better on flat screens nowadays than they do on CRTs.
Really? Like which ones, for example? Because I thought mostly if retro consoles would be, you know, CRT TVs.
Yeah, probably the more later generation consoles, definitely. Definitely look a bit better on LCDs than CRTs, and anything with a SCART plug on it, of course, is going to work well on an LCD TV. I've got quite a few French systems as well, which are Peritel, which is the French equivalent of SCART, Peritel. So, yeah, that's why quite a few of the systems I've got are French, because it seems also a lot of the early systems released in France, instead of having RF, they had Peritel SCART cables, which just saves having to tune RF, and, yeah, I try and avoid RF systems. They're a lot of hassle trying to get them tuned in and not quite getting a good picture quality or anything, and, yeah, trying to go for SCART systems.
Now, one of the things, talking about tuning in, events and stuff like that, I want to talk about Retromania, because it's the event that we're holding on the bank holiday weekend on the 25th at the Wickford Community Centre. Now, I think I told you off the podcast before, the reason why I wanted to do this event is because I'm a married man, I've got my wife, my kids, work and everything. I love having these consoles and I like playing these games, but I don't have the time to play them, and I'd love to actually have other people to play them with. But again, real life gets in the way, so I thought, why not? Let's just set one day aside and hold it in a little venue, and that's all I thought. I've gone into this sort of like completely blind. I've got no expectations. I've never done an event like this. So what to expect then, you know? You're actually going to sort of like load up everything in the morning. How long is that going to take you to pack things?
Well, a lot of stuff is box ready. It's hopefully hopefully about an hour and a half, 2 hours it should take me to load the van up in the morning. The longest bit is just carrying the CRT TVs from down the shed, because they're right down the bottom of the garden, unfortunately. But
right.
I'm going to have everything else ready downstairs in the front room. I'm going to have no floor space in the front room. It'll just be all downstairs ready to go kind of thing. And then it's just playing Tetris in the back of the van to get it all to fit in. And as you get more tools in, then it's then just taking little bits out and putting it back in again just to squeeze it all in. Most of the systems I've taken don't have any original boxes. They're not these blue plastic boxes which all stack up, and sort of like two or three systems per box. So yeah, you can fit quite a bit in them, and fit quite a bit in a transit van.
Now, I mean, we can get access into this venue at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Now, the event doesn't open till 10 o'clock. Now, are we cutting it a bit close then, when we think about it, if we get, you know, get the keys, get in at 8 o'clock to set up in this room?
Well, we'll just have to see how things go. Setting up and packing away always takes much longer than people realise and think. It's why at events I normally try and like set up either the evening or the day beforehand, and packing up ain't so bad, because also sometimes you have a few people to help you, which is nice, and that speeds things up a little bit, and once all the event is over. But it's probably the two worst bits about an event is setting it up and packing it away, especially because it's all over and sad.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the whole sort of like everyone getting together, because a lot of the Retro Asylum podcast team, they're going to get there nice and early, you know, to help us pack and stuff. And I'm looking forward to it to being a team effort, everyone putting on the systems, putting them on the tables. I haven't even thought about maybe putting tablecloths down. I haven't even thought about plugs, extensions. I think the only thing I have thought about is how long it's going to take to tune certain systems in, because it can be a real pain trying to find the right frequency that you need to play your computer on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's why I'm also quite selective with what televisions I've bought. I've only bought ones I know that can be either changed on the tuning or moved onto the SCART channel with buttons on the front of them. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about having 200 remote controls or whatever and trying to find the right one. But that does also have a problem that if you do use a remote control with them, you're controlling all of them sometimes. You've got to be careful. You end up trying to switch one on and you end up switching four others off because they're all in the same remote control frequency, of course. The best thing to do is try and get systems with SCART cables rather than RF tuning and aerial connectors, because generally with a SCART, it's just plugging a SCART lead in the back, it's tuned in. It's then just putting it on the AV channel, and on some TVs, it will even automatically change to the SCART channel when you plug them in on some systems.
Now, I mean, some of the systems I'm bringing down is the systems I used to own as a kid. So I'm bringing the Atari 2600 Junior. I'm bringing the ZX Spectrum, our Commodore 64. So a lot of these are going to be manually tuned in. And I've tried them on my sort of normal TV and it didn't work. So I had to go and get my old TV from my mum's house. And it works a treat that way, just manually tuning it as opposed to doing it via the remote control, sort of trying to find the certain frequency, trying to do it that way.
Oh, yeah, but a lot of these systems do actually use the same channel in the UK. A lot of UK systems actually use the same frequency in the same channel, so if you tune one in, generally, that'd all work. But I do have a few RF systems which are Australian, and they're on interesting frequencies. Mm-hmm. Nothing standard at all. And I've got one system which is called a Commodore Max. It's Japanese.
Right.
And the only way I've managed to get that to tune in is to buy a PCTV card. And that supports all countries, of course. Otherwise, I would have had to import a television from Japan, and that wouldn't have been cheap.
That's just amazing. Like, you've got all these different TVs with different sort of frequencies. Like, I mean, are you aware that certain systems only work on certain TVs, or...?
I'm still learning on some of them. But some of them I know what TVs work well with what systems, so I do try and match them up and keep them together. In fact, I do have a spreadsheet where I've matched up what system works well with what television.
Oh, and, a spreadsheet, wow.
Yeah, I did two big events this year. I did NERG up in Newcastle, which was a long way away, a long drive, but one of the best events that I've done, my favourite event of the year so far, and Silicon Dreams.
Before you move on to the next one, why don't you tell us what was so good about NERG then? Who organised that, and why was it such a good event? So we can get some ideas on how to make our event a bit special.
Yeah, it's the first one that has been run up there. A guy called Philip Murphy ran it. Nice bloke. And yeah, I just found out about it on Facebook, sort of come across it somehow. I think one of my friends must have liked the page on Facebook, and then I found it that way. And then I just contacted him, like I did yourself, saying, do you need any system, any consoles, any computer systems kind of thing. And it just went from there kind of thing. But it also focused quite heavily on arcade machines and pinball machines. Mm-hmm. There was an awful lot of pinball machines and arcade machines there, but I took about 60 systems along. Originally I was only going to take 40. Somehow it ended up 60. I don't know how. Actually 20 systems sort of like worked their way in there somehow. I don't know. It was just a good atmosphere. Everyone had a lot of fun. It went far too quickly. That's the only disappointment about it. The weekend was just over before I knew it. And he also looked after us quite well as well. There was a little after show party as well after the event, which was we're all a bit tired. Unfortunately, that's the only thing. They're quite exhausting, these events, especially long weekend ones, and if you're doing a lot of driving and everything. So. That's what's going to be nice about this Essex event. I don't have to drive millions of miles away. So, it's quite nice having local ones close to you and being able to sleep in your own bed at night and not have to worry about checking out hotels or anything as well. So, I don't know. It was just good. It was put on well organised and well looked after and having fun and being enjoyable. And that's the main thing about these events. It's it's not even always all about the games. It's also about the people you meet and people which go to the events and getting to meet new people and old friends. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So do you find yourself loads of the same sort of faces go to these events? Do you see that your regulars?
You do at some events, yeah. A lot of people which go to Retrovision went to the one before that and the one before that as well. And yeah, and some people go to all the events. Mm-hmm. You do get to meet the same people quite often. there's one bloke who's come into the Retromission all the way from Scotland, and he travels all the way down from Scotland every year, and that's just amazing.
Is it the guy with the glasses?
Bane, his name is, or he's known to everyone as Bane. Yeah, that's Bane.
that's amazing, bloke. Though. What was the next event then that you mentioned then after knowing that you'd done?
Yeah, Silicon Dreams. That was a good event as well. Quite a lot of fun. Unfortunately, it was a bit hot. For some reason, we had a heat wave that weekend, and yeah. It made everything just a bit too hot and warm. And I think not so many people showed up because of the nice weather, and thought we'd enjoy the nice weather for a change, you know. But yeah, still a lot of fun. I had a lot more of the rarer systems there, being more focused that event on less the gaming side, more the rarity side. It was sort of more focused on, I say, more the speciality side of it rather than the gaming. So I took quite a few French systems along, quite a few of my Japanese systems along, and less of the common stuff, more of the rare stuff. So yeah, and at both events, one of the most popular systems I took along was the Sharp X68000, which has been very, very popular.
Mm-hmm. Where did you pick that one up from then?
That was that came from, I believe it was someone in Spain on eBay Spain.
Yeah.
That's another little trick of mine to get these systems. They don't always show up on eBay UK. So eBay has got its own French website and its own Spanish website as well. Yeah. So it's just going on them and setting up safe searches on them as well for what you're looking for. So yeah, that's one of my hints there, one of my little tricks.
I think one of our hosts from the podcast, I can't remember which one it is, he does exactly the same thing. He orders his computers from sort of like Spain or France. Certain machines are more popular, so that's why he does that, he's found. So going back to Retromania then, again, I've gone in completely blind to this. We've got about 40 of your systems. I'm taking like about maybe 15 of my own systems. We're probably aiming to get for about 20, 30 people. I don't think everyone's going to show up around the same time, but I think everyone that is going is, I think I know everyone from the, you know, Retro Asylum forum. I know a few other people from a few other sort of forums and on Facebook. So I'm hoping that it should all go, you know, fantastic. We've got a few tournaments going on. So what are your expectations, you know, like with a smaller venue like this? How do you think it will be?
I think the day's going to be over before we know it. Mm-hmm. I think we're just going to lose track of time, and before we know it, it'll be done and over. For me, I don't know, a really good event just tends to go much quicker than ones which ain't so good, although I don't think there's such a thing as a bad event. I don't think I've ever been to a terrible, dreadful event, to be honest. They've all been unique and different in their own ways, and found their own ways of being special and different, whether that's to do with the systems there, who's running it, the people which show up. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays, the people which go to a lot of events, it's more about meeting up with old friends and people which go to them all the time and meeting up with people rather than playing on the games. In fact, I know a few people at been to some of the events, and they've just ended up not playing on any systems at all. Just ended up chatting all day, which still fun, still good.
See, that's the thing. It's like I'm worried about, because I mean I've only got the event from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. and I could have hired it out for a little bit longer, but because this is my first event I'm actually doing, I didn't know how many people would be there. So I didn't think, okay, well, if I have it to 10 o'clock, so I thought as a trial, I'll do 10 to 6, see how many people show up, get people's feedback, and then what I am planning is doing these every couple of months. Now, earlier on off the podcast, you mentioned that there's certain times of the year that these things aren't as popular due to weather conditions, like if I was to do one in December or January.
Yeah, you've got the risk of snow and ice and just bad and poor weather. in August, not many are run because it's school holidays and you sometimes have warm weather, like we have been recently. The weather's been particularly nice recently and good, which I think this time last year it was a lot worse than it is this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, weather at certain times of the year does affect it, sometimes in good ways, sometimes in bad ways. Sometimes it's better to run one on the school holidays because people have got time off work generally and can make it long and come along. Sometimes it's not good because they're going on one holiday. It all swings in roundabouts, and you can never get a date for these things, which is good for absolutely everyone and suits everyone. It's impossible. So that's why I think it is nice if you can run a few a year, or even six a year, like you're saying. That's a good idea, because if they miss one, then they'll probably make the next one.
I mean, we haven't even done the first one yet, and like I'm not going to mention where I'm planning, like to our listeners yet, where I'm planning the second one, but I did mention to Steve where I am planning it, and I'm hoping that the second venue, I've been there before, it's slightly bigger, we're going to have a lot more systems there, and again, it all depends on the success of this first one. So like, when we are at Retromania, I'm going to ask your feedback, I want to ask people, but I'm so looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to playing machines that I haven't played. I mean, got a Virtual Boy, haven't you?
I have, yes. Yeah, in fact, that's one of the systems which I don't often take to events because it's very fragile. There's two systems I've got which are very fragile, which I generally don't take to events. The other is a Vectrex, because often if you leave a Vectrex running all day, it will die.
Yeah.
Because they're just fragile. They're just not made for it, kind of thing. The Virtual Boy is the other one. It's quite a fragile system with a stand and everything, and I've still got it in the shoebox which it arrived in.
It was
sent in a shoebox, yeah, not the original box or anything, so I got it a bit cheaper that way. Don't have an awful lot of games for that, but it's an interesting one. Hopefully we won't give too many people headaches with that one over the weekend.
Well, I briefly played one at Revival, and you know what? I didn't get the headaches that everyone was talking about. I mean, the way I thought it was that you literally put it on and it just kills your brain. But it wasn't that bad, honestly. It wasn't torture. I could play the game. I enjoyed it. And I took it off because, again, I couldn't really get into it at Revival because there was so much there. I found myself just going to one system, playing it for a minute, going to the next system, playing for a minute. And this is what I'm looking for this event to be a lot more intimate and being able to dedicate a bit more time on certain games.
Oh, yeah. Game choice is also quite important at these events as well. There are certain games which work better than other games at events, such as... you don't really want to be loading up a Final Fantasy game on one of the systems, because that's quite a long-winded game, and if someone does sit down and play on it, whatever, you probably won't see that system, anyone else being able to use it for the rest of the day, kind of thing, you know. So at the bigger events especially, like little puzzle games and all that work better, because they're quick, simple games, kind of thing, rather than the more thought-out, long-winded games. But game choices, I believe, is, some people disagree with me, but I don't know, I think game choice is also very important as well. And there's also one system I'm hoping to bring along. In fact, I'm planning on bringing it along, which I've not taken to an event yet because I've only just got it working.
Oh, so, what's that?
It's called a Laser Active.
Laser? Oh, I don't know this. What is it?
Right. Do you remember Laserdiscs, like the big double-size CDs? It's one of them which plays games, and it had two modules you could plug into it, a Mega Drive module and a PC Engine type module as well. And there's not many games released for it. I've only got one game for it at the moment.
Oh, what game's that?
It's, I can't remember the name of it. It's,
it'll be a surprise on the day.
Yeah, it'll be a surprise on the day. Who knows, I probably won't have a second game by then because they don't come up very often, the games, and they're about £50 each, more expensive than current games, kind of thing.
One of the things I was going to say to you, earlier on you mentioned about having get too many games out in one go and trusting people. What I've decided to do, I spoke to a few of the other guys on the podcast, is that I'm going to just basically limit it to one game per console, because I'm just thinking I don't want to take the chance of your stuff getting swiped or pocketed, or my stuff or someone else's stuff. So that way, at least if it is, we can limit the amount that does. I hope it doesn't come to that, but do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think it will, because this isn't really being advertised so much to the public, this event, from what I understand. It's more of a forum members event. A bit like the Retrovisions and Retromissions have been. They've been more just the same people every time, not really general public, more people you know anyway who understand and value the stuff and ain't going to nick it, hopefully.
Yeah.
Very unlikely.
I mean, we've got like about 6 members of the Retro Asylum podcast team, and I've basically informed everyone anyway that if everyone can keep an eye on people, everyone can keep an eye on things. If you see someone walking around with something under the coat, you know, stop them, rugby tackle them. But
someone walking with a... what's a big system? A Sega Saturn under their coat. You're going to notice that.
Now, you've also got some sort of like arcade type things that you said you might be bringing along as well.
Yeah, I've got a few bar tops here. In fact, I've got 4 bar tops that I'm going to be bringing along. Two horizontals and 2 verticals. So a bar top is it's like a little arcade machine which goes on a bar top. That's what they call bar tops.
how many games do you have in those, by the way?
Right, they've all got jammer connectors on them, but I'm actually using multi-boards on them. So two of them have got the 60-in-1 multi-board, one of them has got a 310-in-1, and one of them's got a 276-in-1. The 276-in-1 is like horizontal games, all classic games like Pac-Land and games like that, Time Tunnel. That's one of my favourites.
That is amazing. You know what? I'm so glad you're bringing these machines down, because as much as you can have the retro consoles and everything, I think you really need to have like a couple of arcade machines. And I tell you what, I can't wait.
The 310-in-1 is mostly Neo Geo type games. That's why I don't actually have a Neo Geo in my collection, because having that, I don't need one. That's got a lot of the King of Fighter games and all the Neo Geo kind of games on it, you know. So that's why I've got that one, and I've not got Neo Geo in my collection. And also, they're quite expensive as well, the Neo Geos and bits for those. And the 216 ones are just all your classic vertical games like Donkey Kong and Pac-Man and Galaga and Amidar and all those kind of games, you know. So I've got 2 of them.
please say you have something like Bomb Jack in there. Bomb Jack is possibly one of my favourite arcade games ever. It's just...
Yeah, that's on there. Yeah, Bomb Jack is on it. Yeah, definitely. And, also on these ones, you can also just flip them over and change the joysticks from 4-way to 8-way as well. But in most cases, I'll just leave them on 4-way, because most of the games are designed for a 4-way joystick rather than an 8-way joystick. So, I just leave them on the 4-way setting there, so...
Now, I want to get your feedback on some of the games I've chosen for the tournaments we're having. Now, the first one that we're doing is a Street Fighter tournament.
Always goes down well. Always goes good. Good fighting game, yeah. Are we going to be running that as a pyramid competition, do you think? Or how's that going to run then?
You know what? All I know is this. I've said I'm going to have a tournament. I have no idea how it's going to work.
Well, the way pyramids work... let's try and explain it simply. You can either have an 8-way or 16-way pyramid, generally. Right. And so you have 2 people play each other, and then the person who wins goes through to the next round. Yeah. And it then moves down in like a pyramid until you get to like a semi-final 2 people, and then the last stage of the pyramid is a winner kind of thing. So that's why it's called a pyramid. It sort of like moves down like a pyramid. Yeah. But the only problem with having a competition like that is you're restricted to the amount of people that can enter. Either 8 people, 16 people, generally. You can also run larger pyramids, but I try not to go above 16, because it gets a bit complicated, takes a bit too long, and I think the only time it's been tried with a larger pyramid is for a Pong competition at Geek Festival once. But they held the largest ever Pong tournament, I think, there. Most ever Pong player, I think. I know they're in the Guinness Book of World Records for it, I'm sure they are.
Fantastic.
This Pong thing that they run, not this year, last year they ran that. So
now, the other game that I was going to say, we've got Virtual Tennis 2 on the Sega Dreamcast. What do you think of that, Joyce?
Yeah, that's a good game as well. I've actually got an original that game. I've got very few original games. I probably shouldn't say that. But
they're backups.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a lot of backups, very few originals, because I just don't have space to store them or places to put them anywhere or money to buy them, all kind of thing. If I started collecting, I'd want every single one and I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd just end up in a lot of debt. Virtual Tennis 2, though, is a good choice. It's a good game. I quite like that game.
Because you can do two players, you can do four players, so that way you can have a bit more variety. So, I mean, I've always loved it. I've always thought it's probably the best tennis game ever. I've played the more modern ones or the more modern systems, but for me, it peaked at Virtual Tennis 2. Now, the other game that we've got is Mario Kart 64, and that was actually by popular demand by people on the forum and on Facebook, because some people prefer that more than the Super Nintendo version, which I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah, some people prefer the SNES version, some people prefer the N64 version. I'm not very good at either myself, although apart from simulators, driving games are one of my favourite kind of games, the driving games. I do like a good driving game. But I don't know, I'd probably say I prefer the SNES version myself, but that's just me. The N64 version is good as well. It's all good, and probably one of the better games on the N64, definitely. I do have an N64 multi-cart as well, which has got every single game on it. So
really? Oh, my God, wow. How much did they go for?
The N64 ones actually ain't too cheap. Probably looking, I don't know, I think I paid about 120 euros, something like that. But, yeah, not cheap, but worth it, because it's cheaper than going out, buying all the games separately, if you can find them.
And plus you've got more room to just have the one kite itself. So, yeah, that makes sense. I'd love to do something like that. Because I also need to get myself like a Super NES SD card cartridge thing, just to save myself some room.
Yeah, you save a lot of room. And you can also play the homebrew stuff as well, which is really good. On the original systems, you don't have to play the homebrew stuff on emulators. You can just play it on the original system when it works. And, that's good as well. Good reason to have them. I think that's how they get away with selling them, to be honest, is to promote it for homebrew usage. But we all know people don't.
Now, we've talked about some of the games that I'm going to have at the event. What are the most popular games, then, that you've noticed at these events?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've got my favourites, which I load up, but then you come along and see they've changed to something else, and you have a look and think, oh, what's that game? Let's have a look at that and all that. But as I say, because I've been doing the bigger events more recently, I've been going for the games which I know people can easily sit down, play for 5 or 10 minutes and ain't too long-winded or don't take too long to play. One of the favourites on the Dreamcast, of course, is Typing of the Dead.
Oh, really?
I'm sure you've played that.
Yeah, but I didn't realise that those are the ones that people really enjoyed at the events. Well,
yeah, it's quite a unique game and a bit different, I suppose. And, people always have a little go on that. I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking Katamari as well. Back in the day, Katamari was played quite a bit on the PS2. That's a good game. Dreamcast has got loads of good games, though. I think I'm going to have to buy more Dreamcasts to take to events. I have several out because there's just so many good games on the Dreamcast. I don't know. Racing games are always good because they're quick and easy and fun. And two-player and four-player gaming is popular as well. Getting a bit of multiplayer action going kind of thing, playing with your friends and sometimes even strangers, people you don't know, and rather than the single player system. So
because we've got Micro Machines Tournament Edition, Micro Machines 2 Tournament Edition, which I think, what was that, 6 or 8 players on the Sega Mega Drive because of the little cartridge expansion it had?
I believe it's just 4 player on the Mega Drive because it's a JPEG cartridge, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah.
Which had the 2 controller ports on the cartridge as well as 2 on the system, although they did release a multi-tap for the Mega Drive. I've got one. Don't think I've used it on anything, but I do have a list of all the games which support it. I don't think I have that many controllers for the Mega Drive, though. At least not very many good controllers. And I've realised recently it's sometimes cheaper to buy systems with controllers than it is just to buy controllers.
Well, that is one of the things that I started doing, like car boot sales. Now, recently, if you look on eBay, you could spend quite a bit on just buying yourself a single control pad for a certain system. So now, if I see a system at a car boot sale and it looks a bit manky, I'll get it anyway because it might work. And if it doesn't work, most likely the control pad will work. And I could get, you know, like a Mega Drive for about £3 with two control pads. And I think it's a chance worth risking for that.
Oh, it's definite, especially with Royal Mail prices having recently gone up. Just the price of postage takes the price of buying one controller from someone up. So you could be looking at, a while back I was looking for some more GameCube controllers, and I was looking for original ones, not these dodgy Chinese third-party copy things, which ain't very good. I was trying to get hold of original ones, and in the end I did just end up buying another system with four controllers, because it was cheaper than just buying individual controllers. So, I've ended up with a system I'm not using in a box at the moment, just to get the controllers.
Okay, guys, so what we're going to start doing now, we're going to start rounding the show up. You know, I just want to say thanks to Steve for actually being on the show. I've been dying to get him on the show for absolutely ages, because I've been dying to talk to him about his events, how he's done these events, because I haven't got a clue. I'm just looking forward to it. So, Steve, thanks very much.
It's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed this. I've used to run a podcast myself back in the day. It weren't retro gaming related, but it's sort of bringing back fond memories of that now, which I used to really enjoy doing. So, no, thank you for inviting me on the show and having me and let me talk about stuff. It's been great.
That's been an absolute pleasure. And all our listeners that are going to Retromania, which is August the 25th, Wickford Community Centre, pop down to retroasylum.com or find us on Twitter, which is RetroAsylum1, and you'll find out exactly where this event is. So, guys, we'll see you next time, and goodbye.
Goodbye.